This evening's scripture reading comes from 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 6 through 10. That's 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 6 through 10. The point is this: whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver, and God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work. As it is written, he has distributed freely, he has given to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You have to pardon my voice here just for a moment. Diane told me that you started out kind of bad, but you got going pretty good this morning. And I hope that will hold true tonight. We'll see what happens as time goes on. There are words that, when you talk about word associations with people that are Christians, I would say words like obedience and faithfulness and the idea of determination and courage and abiding, and even word sacrifice is mentioned several times in the scriptures. And you think about those words that are associated with those people that are Christians. And there's also another word, and it's the word giving. When I talk about a subject like this, one of the things that some people may say is, well, what preachers don't need to do is get into people's pocketbook. Well, I don't do that. There's only one pocketbook I get into, and that's my wife's. And I don't get anybody else's. Nobody else's. And as a result of the lesson that we're going to talk about tonight, I first of all want to give you a real clear understanding that this idea of giving is motivated by the fact of what God's done for us first, like John 3:16. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. From that, the people that want to follow this one called Jesus, realizing what God has done for them in that gift, know that that's a tremendous sacrifice. No one could give enough money that can match what God has given. As a result of that, knowing what's been done to provide for us an opportunity to be saved, that God has given us this plan of salvation with hope of everlasting life, those people that find themselves wanting to be his disciples and find themselves obeying all that he says for them to do, they appreciate that sacrifice that he's made. Not only in giving their life and their soul, one of the first reactions that they have is doing everything they can to give what they have to God. And that's the thing that you're going to see within the scriptures. In the book of Acts, the second chapter, verse 44 and verse 45, this is one of the first things that the people did in the book of Acts. After they realized what was given to them in the sacrifice of Jesus, in verse 44 of the book of Acts, chapter 2, these people gave of themselves, and it says, all the believers were together and had all things common, and they sold their possessions and goods and parted them to all according as any man had need. That's the first thing they did. That was the first action. They're wanting to give of themselves and all the things that they possessed to somebody else for what it was they needed. And you see this word giving associated with the Christians. You see the word giving to hospitality. You see the word giving to those who are in need, as in this case here. You see even people giving their physical life that Jesus talked about them doing. Even in the book of Matthew, Mark chapter 8, verse 35, verse 36, that they would even give themselves rather than gaining everything that the world has to offer them. And this is something very interesting that you see within the scriptures. And one of the most interesting cases of giving is found in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 8 in the first five verses. In 2 Corinthians 8, verse 1 through verse 5, one of the most interesting things about this is what you see happen in Acts 2 with them giving themselves is the last thing he mentions in verse 5. What Paul mentions in verse 1 through verse 4 is they are giving beyond what they have the ability to give. And it says in verse 2, how much a proof of the affliction, the abundance of their joy, and their deep poverty abounding to the riches of their liberality. For according to their power I bear witness, yea, and beyond their power they gave them their own accord. Then the question is, why do they do this? Why do you give beyond what you've got? Well, it's verse 5. This they did not as we had hoped, but first they gave their own self to the Lord and then to us through the will of God. So you see how this process works. When someone is going to give of themselves to Jesus, it's almost going to be instinctively part of what their nature is as a child of God is to give what they've got in whatever way they possibly can. And that's why I had John read the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 6 to verse 10. The portion of what we give is going to be based upon what we sow. And most people think, well, that's based upon how much you invest in something, how much you invest in stocks and bonds and mutual funds, and even how much you invest in business and these kind of things. What you put out there in investments or what you plant out there, then you're going to get a lot or you're going to get a little. One of those cases. But yet think about this. Not so much should we tie the idea of amounts of physical things associated with 2 Corinthians 9, but the heart. Whatever you sow within your heart, to whatever degree you sow, your faithfulness to God is going to find itself corresponding to how much you give monetarily. To whatever degree you give yourself to Jesus is going to show itself in whatever you give to anybody that's in need or whether it's to the church. So you sow sparingly, you reap sparingly. You're not going to get a whole lot out of Christianity. You just sow a little bit. But if you sow bountifully, then you're going to reap a whole lot. And what you're going to reap more than anything else is a generous spirit to give to what needs to be given to. It stands without exception. It will stand forever. Acts chapter 20, verse 35. It is more blessed to give than to receive. You give in response to what's done for you. And not only that, it's based upon the command that's already been given in the Scriptures. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 1 and verse 2, that we'll talk about in just a little bit. But let me just illustrate something to you that I want you to think about. As we get into this, I'm going to ask you about six questions. Then we're going to answer all six of those in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 1 and verse 2. If it's happened to you, I know it's happened to me, that you pull up into, let's go to a city somewhere. And you pull up to a parking meter. And you pull up to this parking meter, and you get out, and you pull out your change, your quarters, and you're about to put money in it, and lo and behold, there's time still left on the meter. 15 minutes, 20 minutes, maybe up to 30 or 40 minutes. Somebody thought that they were going to stay in that place a lot longer, but they didn't. And there you are, parked in this place. Do you feel guilty? Because you didn't put the quarters in, most of us are going to stay there. Now we've had the opportunity to find ourselves parking free. And we're not going to be there in 15, 20 minutes. But we're parking free. Sometimes there's this tendency for people that are members of the body of Christ to find themselves sitting in a pew and reaping all the benefits of the generosity of other people and letting them give because they have the wherewithal to give more than they give. They almost sit parked in a pew, reaping the benefits of all these other people and what they do. Is that proper? Is that honorable? Is that just? Should we do that? Is that robbing God of what we have the opportunity to do? Should we just sit back and let them do all the work and give all the things they've got and not us do anything? Well, think about this. Does God even need a treasury to begin with? How does the church receive their funds? How much should you give? Do we need a special collection? Do I give only if there's a need? And do I give conditionally? And when I ask this last question, I want you to think, in other words, do I give conditionally if all the circumstances are right? First of all, I've got a job. First of all, I have the ability to give. And even if the circumstances are such that I like what's being taught, or like what decisions are being made by the elders. In other words, if all the conditions are right, then I'm going to find myself giving. Is that the basis of our giving? And I believe we're going to be able to answer all of these six questions in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Let's go over here. In 1 Corinthians 16, verse 1 and verse 2, it says, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I gave order to the churches of Galatia, so also do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let each one of you lay by him in store, as he may prosper, that no collection be made when I come." Now the first thing you're going to see is this phrase here in verse 2. Upon the first day of the week. That's simply going to give you a time frame. That's going to give you an idea about when this command is going to be fulfilled. And there's no other command or example whereby the collective body of the church is going to find themselves coming together to make a collection or to give, to do what it is asked of them to do in this case. And the brethren know that in this case here, that when they're talking about this idea of on the first day of the week, they know without any question when this first day of the week is. And they know how many first days of the week there are. So that means they know it's going to be every first day of the week. But what's parallel with this, these people are coming together on the first day of the week to have a collection. But parallel with this is going to be another opportunity, another activity of worship, and that's their partaking of the Lord's Supper. That's already been discussed in the book of Acts chapter 20, verse 7, and you know these people are already going to be there for that particular purpose. Therefore, you just don't look at this collection as a matter of convenience. Oh, we might as well go ahead and do it. We're going to take the Lord's Supper anyway. We'll just go ahead and conveniently have the Lord do the collection. No, there's not a convenient effort. It's a matter of command upon the first day of the week that they do this. The command is given to be done. And it's widely known. It's not just for the church at Corinth to say, well, it's only going to be beneficial for you, the church at Corinth, to do this. Because he says in verse 1, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I gave order to the churches of Galatia, so also do ye." That involves a lot of churches. That's not just the church at Corinth. It's a widely known command given that this is when this is supposed to be done. But then go to the next phrase that he mentions here. "Upon the first day of the week, let each one of you, and when you talk about each one of us, that narrows it down as to who it is that's participating. Collectively, you know that the church is going to do this, but individually, we're talking about people that are in the body of Christ. There's no age or sex preference here. It doesn't say it's for all the Christians that are 18 and above. If you're a Christian, this is your responsibility. If you're 13 years old and you're a Christian and you're babysitting, this is your responsibility. If you're a 17-year-old and you're tossing those pizzas around at Domino's or you're delivering pizzas at Domino's, this is your responsibility. And even if you're retired and you're on a fixed income, this is your responsibility. So there's no age preference in there. Not even sexual preference is made in regards to this. This is a command is for everybody. It's a free will offering from each one of us. Each one of us. What that does, to say each one of us, it points to the source of where this is coming from. To say each one of us eliminates any kind of business that we get into. If the church is not going to get into business, and as a result, the profit of the business is going to go into the treasury. We're not going to find ourselves investing in mutual funds. We're not going around begging door to door. We're not looking for a car wash. We're not finding ourselves in foreign investments. We're not conducting yard sales and all those kind of things to bring in more money, to bring in more cash because our funds are low. We're looking at each one of us. And that's what you understand. We're not coming out here to put up a roadblock at 27 and 914 and say, we need to solicit this because we're doing this. We're about to have a building fund. We need some more money. We need your help. This is not given as a responsibility for everybody else. So you know where the example is for where these funds come from. There's no question about it saying each one of us. That's the command. Now, with that being said, then that means I've got to look at me as each one of us to know what I'm supposed to do. I mean, where am I going to get what I've got to give, like each one of us give? if I'm going to give anything, I need to get in drugs because that's where the money is. I need to get into pornography. Well, that's where the money is. When you get into the money, that's what you're going to have to give. Therefore, it doesn't really matter where you get the funds as long as you do the giving, because it's each one of us. And that goes back down to this idea of, how am I going to get what I've got to give? I'm not dealing in pornography. That's a billion-dollar business. Well, in the billions of dollars business every year, and I'm not getting into drugs, and there's a lot of money in that. But when you look in the book of Ephesians chapter 4, probably the answer is given very plainly and simply, without a shadow of a doubt. You know, in verse 28 it says, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing that is good, that he may have wealth to give to him that has need. Now you know what the source of what it is that each one of us has to give. It comes from what you do honestly and with what you buy, sell, trade, and even in the case of inheritance. And that's one of the things that Jesus addressed in the book of Luke chapter 12, verse 15. Tell my brother to divide inheritance with me. So there's a lot of sources of where you find what it is that each one of us give to fulfill this command given in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 1 and verse 2. This is, it's free will offering. It is the same scenario as with what happened with the people of Israel. If you remember in the book of Exodus chapter 32 through chapter 35, they were petitioned by God till Moses said, call upon the people and let them bring the silver and the gold and the garments and all these things that were necessary to build the tabernacle. Get it all from them. He wasn't going to snap his finger and all of a sudden, here comes the gold, here comes the silver. And God could have done that, but he calls upon the people. Calls upon the people. Why call upon the people? They had abundance. Where'd they get it? From Egypt. That's where they got it. Call upon the people and let them bring. And then you see in Exodus 35, verse 5, they, with a willing heart, gave to the building of the tabernacle. With a willing heart, they did this. Therefore, you see very clearly, it's identical with what you see in 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7. It's with a cheerful heart people come giving. It's not a forced effort. They're not coerced. They're not compelled. They know this is free will offering. Let me just diagram for you something that I thought was very interesting to put together to share with you just where each one of us can give what we have to the Lord. Think about this just a minute. There's more than 100 people here. But just for the sake of example, I want you to think about something. Let's say, well, on the average, you've got a congregation of 100 people. Let's say 100 people daily. For 30 days of the month, they buy a psaltery, one per day. One times 30 times 50 people, half the congregation, 1,500 times 75, then you've got $1,125. Let's just say 50% of the people do that. Let's just say 50% buy a candy bar per day, which is about 75% for 30 days. They do that, the same amount of money. And then let's say 50% buy a bag of chips or peanuts or something like that, some snack, and it's 75 cents too. That all that adds up. Next thing you know, it's got a total of $3,375 for the month. That's just 50 people of the 100 people that just daily buy that. But let's say 50 of you buy it for, let's say, 15 days, and the other 50 buy it for the, and it all adds up the same thing. But let's just go on beyond this, and let's talk about how it is we buy a cup of coffee. There's a lot of coffee drinkers out here. 25% of you, only 25% of you buy a cup of coffee per day. Let's just say 50 cents. I know in some places bigger, it's higher than that. But for that amount of time, $375 per month for people that 25 people buy a cup of coffee per day. Let's say miscellaneous expenses like going out to the restaurant, entertainment, sports, that thing. And this is low dollar. This is low dollar. $20. National average is about $20. That's really low in some parts of the country. But for 100 people, that's $2,000. And add all that up, you got $5,750 a month. $5,750 a month. Let's just add that and see what you got. That's on top of probably what we've got coming in every month. That's on top of. That's on top of that. Amazing how these figures add up real quick. Maybe this is why people don't give. Because this is where it's all going. Maybe this is why each one of us is not doing what we should be doing. All these expenses are adding up. Maybe one of the reasons why all this is happening, more so than doing as the book of 1 Corinthians 16, verse 1 and verse 2 says, each one of us giving, may be coming true in the next point, and that is this, and that is we don't lay by him in store. Lay by him in store is the phrase lay by is a matter of establishing. It is a matter of purpose. You set for something. It's put aside for a particular reason, and there's a plan by which you do this. When it came down to giving, let me give you an example of something. This is really the negative of this. In the book of Matthew chapter 6, verse 1 through verse 4, there was a plan, a purpose, an intent, or in this case, laying by on the part of the Pharisees. Do you know what they did? They were giving alms. It says in verse 2, and Jesus says, don't sound a trumpet before these the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you that they receive their reward. They are bestowing this so that everybody can see. This is why they're laying it by. This is for a purpose. It's a plan. It's an establishment that they want other people to see them and what they're doing. A lot of times people look at this as lay by in store, and then they refer to the Pharisees, which chapter 5 of this book says this in verse 20. For I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no wise enter into the kingdom of heaven. Unless your righteousness exceeds their righteousness. When you look at the righteousness of the Pharisees, automatically we think of 10%. Because we think about the Jews, we think that's what they did. They tithe 10%. Sometimes that's a false indicator of how much you should give, because when you look at Deuteronomy, especially in Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 5 through verse 18, you're looking at a situation where it's not just a particular 10%. They're giving more than this. They're giving a whole lot more. Lay by him in store. They've got more involved in what's going on. But the question is, do you believe that this laying by in store is going to be done by you withholding any exception? Going on vacation? When you get sick? Even if there's certain things that you don't agree with, the way the money's spent? I mean, not unscriptural in things, but scriptural things. But you thought it ought to be used for the painting of the building, and yet what they're doing, they're buying an air conditioner and putting every window in the building. And the preaching's too long or it's too short, it's just right, or I don't like it, I do like it. The priority by which you give is your relationship with God and your generosity toward what God's done for you. That's what you see. There's no holdout here, and there's no forgetting of giving. It's a laying by in store. It's a purpose. It's a plan. But consider this. Do you purpose, plan, lay by, even if you had to pay your life insurance this week, and even if you had to pay to buy 2 new tires for your car? I mean, is the laying by still going on? Or is there a conditional purpose by which you lay by? The condition's based upon me not buying medicine this week, and I don't have to buy as many groceries as I did last week. Is it conditional based upon the fact that we will or will not support a man up in Montana $500 a month? Is it conditioned based upon that? Is it conditioned based upon what the current balance is in the treasury? Are there conditions to laying by in store? Unless we store, or unless we lay by in store, we don't have the purpose and the plan and the conditions are meeting our satisfaction, then number one, we're going to be reluctant to give. Number two, we may give a little, or number three, we may give a lot. Therefore, if the elders get up here in front of us and they say, what we're going to do is we're going to add on to the building and it's going to take at least $200,000. As soon as that is mentioned, What are you going to do? You're going to do it out of necessity. We need to get this thing going. Other than doing it because this is what you're supposed to do and it's already there. And rather than seeing what you can do to come up and take care of a necessity that the elders say we need to meet this month, in the next 6 months, in the next year. Look at 1 Corinthians 16. You're looking at the conditions already there. First day of the week, let each one of us lay by in store. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7, you've got the cheerfulness there. You got all those things there. That's not a necessity. Not a necessity. Listen to what the text is saying. And as a result of listening to the text and what it says, you'll know what lay by in store is all about. But let's go to this next point that he mentions here in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 2. Each, upon the first day of the week, let each one of us of you lay by him in store that he may prosper. As he may prosper. That prosperity kind of goes back to what I talked about a while ago with this idea of the Pharisees looking at the percentage, give the numbers. If you can give me the specifics, then I don't have any problems. Tell me how much. And there's people that ask you, how much do you think I ought to give? I got a family of two. Or I got a family of four. I got a family of six. Tell me how many, what we should be giving. And as I mentioned to you a while ago, we normally go over here to the case for the Pharisees, and we say 10%, 10%. And some people don't even give 10%. Some people don't even give 15%. But we look at the Pharisees and we say 10%. But he says exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. Matter of fact, we don't even live under the tithe system anymore. It's a voluntary free will method. As he may prosper. What's going to motivate these people to do this as they may prosper? It goes back to what I mentioned a while ago in 2 Corinthians 8, verse 5. It is them first giving themselves to the Lord. Giving themselves to the Lord. And then, to them, prosperity is not a number. Prosperity is a matter of cheerfulness. Just like 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7 says. We give it because we are so glad to do this. In other words, prosperity, in many cases, when the heart is given to the Lord first, then it's going to be greater than what we would ever think we could give. Because we highly appreciate all that's been done for us by the Lord. There's the motivator for this. Let you think about something. Do you remember, let's go over to the book of Luke chapter 21 just a minute. In Luke 21, there is this woman that is passing by the treasury, and lo and behold, she has two mites in verse 2 of Luke 21, and she casts those two mites in. And Jesus saw this and said, of a truth, I say unto you, this poor widow cast in more than they all. Than they all. She may very well have been poorer than anybody else that came by that treasury that day. She surely was poorer than the people that he mentioned in verse 4. All these did of their superfluity cast into their gifts, but she of her want did cast in all the living that she had. There's the difference. As he may prosper is based upon the want to do it, not the numbers that are necessary. Don't give me the numbers, just give me the attitude, and the numbers will take care of themselves. Numbers will take care of themselves. You're not held to a certain amount because you make a certain amount of money, and because you've got this many people that are dependents in your family. It's based upon the fact that you know what's been done for you. The level of love in your heart is what gauges the prosperity. The love in your heart for God. Not based upon the idea of this likability of the preacher, the likability of the elder's decision, the likability of the teacher, the likability of the church. And if I'm given enough assignments in the church, therefore I'll give more if I get more assignments. All those kind of things. Those are things that don't play into this. They don't play into this. You remember the case with the man in the book of Matthew chapter 19 that came to Jesus, and he asked him this question. What good thing shall I do to inherit eternal life? That's almost like somebody coming to you asking you, how much do I need to give in order that I get to heaven? How much do I need to give to get to heaven? Okay. If somebody comes up to you or you come up to me and I give you a number, okay, you give $500 a week. There's no possible way that I can do that. If you're looking for a number as to say that is going to satisfy you, to say this is what you will give, then only reason you're giving is based upon a number. Not based upon the fact that you have a set-aside amount, lay-by in store. The prosperity is not the generosity in your heart. It's just based upon a number. Let me let you think about something here. When it comes down to prosperity, at the age of 25, if you gave $25 a week, okay, because you knew that that was all you prospered, but at the age of 35, given the conditions that you still got a job, are you still giving $25 a week with the same job that it maybe has increased you over a period of time? At 25, you're 25. At 35, you're still 25. And at 40, you're 25. And still at 50, you're 25. In other words, is this honorable? Are you giving as you prosper? And some folks may come along and say, well, I haven't prospered too much this week. I had a house payment. Had a car payment. Had a phone payment. Had a gas payment. Had my yard mowed. Had my dry cleaning done. Had an insurance bill to pay. Had a cable bill. Had a cable payment. Folks, let me tell you something. All those things are indicators of one thing. Prosperity. Prosperity. Therefore, as you prosper, bring in your hand what's in your heart. And let it not be just the thing that when the purse's open, that's the first bill you get to. Or when you open up your wallet, that's the first bill you find or you see. When you look at the case in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 8, when you notice what he says in verse 1 to verse 5, there are key ingredients that lead these people to give to this need. One of the first things you will see in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 2 is that do it voluntarily. Voluntarily. And then you see in verse 3, they do it generously beyond their power. And you also see in verse 3 the fact that they do it they do it with joy, up in verse 2 rather. They do it with joy, and then you see what goes on down here in verse 5, they go at it selflessly because they've given themselves to the Lord. All those things help you understand what it is that's bringing them to the point of giving. There's no numbers mentioned, no percentages, no values, specifics given. They do it because of what's been done for them. Matter of fact, when you go down to verse 8, it says, I speak not by way of commandment, but as of others, the sincerity also of your love. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that ye through his poverty might become rich. Because of what's been done for you. Let's go back to 1 Corinthians 16. Let's talk about the very last point here. In 1 Corinthians 16, he mentions something in verse 2 where he says, upon the first day of the week, let each one of you lay by him in store, as he may prosper, that no collections be made when I come. And what that's giving you a very clear understanding is of the why. Why we're doing this. So that no collections be made when I come. I'm sure you've heard it various times, maybe in conversations with people, maybe it's been announced on radio or TV. Somewhere along the way that people had these special collections. They've had these special drives or some kind of things that they've been doing to kind of bring more money in, they say. And in order to do that, and the reason they're doing this is because they've got some special thing that they're needing. They're needing money for this campaign. They need money for this campaign. They need money for this effort and money for this program. All those kind of things they've got all lined up. It's a benevolent program. It's a building program. There's some special solicitation that it's announced that focuses on a necessity that needs to be done. And they petition people for that necessity. And the elders can do that here. They can say, well, just like I said a while ago, they're going to build a $200,000 expansion. And they're petitioning the brethren to kick in more, as they say. Up the contribution. Is it needed that we do that? Is that very well what he implies that you need to do is wait until the need is there, the conditions are right, preacher in England needs more money, so we're going to kick in more money this week. There's a benevolent need that goes on because somebody's got to have food on the table and the rent paid. Therefore, we're going to kick in an extra $1,000, $2,000 so they can be paid and that can be taken care of for them for this month or this week. The implication of what you see in this text is there's an avoidance of a special collection. That if the people do it on the first day of the week, each one of them lay by in store, that as they may prosper, so that there will be no collections when I come. There won't be this impulsive giving. There won't be this special need giving. There won't be this special day that they're going to have this voluntary basket or this extra basket come by that's going to say, we need a little bit extra money. We're going to pass another plate. These weekly contributions add to what needs to be done anyway. It's already there. It's already there to be done. Because the work of the church is a daily thing. It's an ongoing effort. It's not one of these things that you say, well, there's a deficiency here. We've got something that needs to be taken care of. It's already there. There is something about this that I want you to think about too. Will this no collection be made when I come? God doesn't need this. God does not need this. The church does. Therefore, the church can do the work that the church is assigned to do by God. What you're seeing in all this is for us. This is for us. All these principles are there for us. That helps us see that part of our income belongs to this effort. It belongs to this effort. That way we find ourselves fulfilling exactly what these people did in Corinth. When I have Jesus doing so much for me, I should be the one who would instinctively do everything I can for the Lord's kingdom, for all that He's done for me, regardless. And then I've heard people say that what you need to do is you need to give until it hurts. You need to give until it hurts. It hurts. Well, let me let you think about something, about the idea of giving. Instead of talking about it regarding it, you give till it hurts, think about this. In 2 Corinthians 9, verse 8, it says, and God is able to make all grace abound unto you, that ye have always all sufficiency in everything, may abound into every good work. Instead of coming along and saying, we need to give until it hurts, give. Regarding these principles here, knowing that you will have always all sufficiency in everything and abound into every good work. If you look at it that way, it's not going to hurt no matter how much you give. It's not going to hurt at all. You're going to do it with all joy and generosity. And as it says in verse 7, with cheerfulness. There's not going to be a problem. But let's just put a few things in perspective here. First of all, in the book of Luke, chapter 12, verse 15, it says, a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things in which he possesseth. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, in verse 6 it says, but godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, for neither can we carry anything out. And then the one that I mentioned earlier in the book of Acts 20, verse 35, where it says of Jesus, he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. How you make your money says something about you. But how you spend your money says even more. There's a man one time who said something about the church. And he said it this way. He said, the church that lives is the church that gives. The church that bestows is the church that grows. The church that spends is the church that wins. The church that keeps is the church that weeps. The church that holds is the church that molds. One thing that I don't believe we need to be deceived about, and that is, don't think that the more you give, the greater your chances are of going to heaven. Don't get that in idea of your mind, because money doesn't win the battles over Satan. It doesn't work. You can't fight a physical battle, a spiritual battle with Satan with something physical. It doesn't really work. You've got to take your love for God and the will for the truth, and that's what's going to help you. One of the things that interests me is, if it's more blessed to give than to receive, and I hear people say that, if it's more blessed to give than to receive, then why aren't more people coming to Jesus? The only answer I could come up with is that the reason more people aren't coming to Jesus is because they don't want to give up their sin. They want to give up for the Lord to be what they need to be. It's because, and there's a reason, they have to give up everything they have, including what's in their pocketbook. Everything's dictated by the Lord, as we talked about tonight. To reach into somebody's pocketbook and start talking about their money, boy, that's really brash. That's really bold, isn't it? Well, I did it. I just did it tonight. To let you understand just the value of what giving's all about. That comes from the heart that first give themselves to the Lord. And as Paul said in the book of Galatians chapter 2, verse 20, it says, I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. And the life that I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. If the Lord asks me to give it, should I not give it? Yes, without a hesitation. But first I must give myself to him. Changing my life in repentance, willing to confess that Jesus is the Son of God, and being baptized in the water where all the sins are washed away. And then, fulfilling the responsibility we talked about tonight, to give to him generously with what it is the church needs to do her work. Consider those things while together we sing this song.